You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Well, that was weird. Welcome to another edition of the Massive Report podcast. Murph is here, Ori. Sam at the control board. Can we call that a board?
Yeah.
It's about the size of a phone. It's amazing.
It's a portable board.
It's called a Zoom. I have to get me one of those just to play with it.
Totally
make my
worth
own
it.
Podcast.
Totally worth it.
I could talk about, I don't know.
Music?
Talk about Saucy.
I don't know.
Can you talk about Saucy?
Yeah, let's do it. Talk about something that's not weird. Saucy Brewworks is not weird. It is the best bar in Columbus and place to be in the world. Saucy Brewworks. If your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? Come down. 443 West 3rd Avenue. Get some food. Get some beer. Have some fun.
That's what I'm doing. I ordered up something of a New Zealand origin this time.
Because
I've always wanted to go
there.
Interesting. That's probably as close as I'm ever going to get. So I'll let you know how the New Zealand IPA is. Like and subscribe. We would appreciate that very much. Well, it was not even a minute into the match on Friday down there at Cincinnati's new park. TQI or what is that?
TQL.
TQL.
It's all consonants.
The cheers went up in the press box as Cincinnati
scored. Very much
scored.
Overblown.
Were there cheers in the press box? Because that is verboten.
There were, but it was from... There was a group of Hispanic guys in front of us. I don't know what outlet they work for, but I've learned over the years that culturally, like a lot of South American, Central American, even, you know, I think Mexico and things like that is common.
Oh, it's okay to cheer in the press box.
Yes,
okay, I saw on Twitter that there was cheering in the press box,
it was,
and I imagine the beat reporters like chest bumping.
No, it was not Patrick Brennan who covers for the Inquirer or anyone like that. It was the tweets that went out were probably should have been explained a little bit better.
All right. Fair enough. Well, I'll put that aside. Well, like we don't have enough controversy. The officiating in this game, Ori, was terrible. And that's the official, Kevin...
what's Stott.
We've had a lot of trouble with him before, haven't we? Just being in a general incompetent?
I believe he's the longest tenured MLS ref.
Boy, so he looked it, too.
I think everyone has had... Every team has had issues with him at some point. But, yeah, it was an interestingly called game, you know. I think, obviously, when you have a rivalry game like that, like you want to keep things controlled. But he was inconsistent with how tight he called things. I do think, all in all, like, it was fair. You know, obviously, we can talk about the Harrison Offal yellow card, the second yellow card.
It was fair because it was bad both ways.
Well, sure, but it was like both teams had reasons to complain. Both teams had calls that went their way. You know, so, I don't know, it was a very weirdly officiated game is the way I'd put it.
It was, and that the whole tone of the entire evening was strange. And I was watching it at a bar, and the sound was down. Mm-hmm. So we had trouble finding a place to get a table. Things are getting busy. So I felt like I didn't have the entire context of what was going on. And at one point, I was confused and thought that Jonathan had somehow accumulated three yellow cards.
I was in the press box and thought the same thing.
Yeah.
So,
okay, good.
Yeah, at home, watching from a television, in that 17th minute, you saw Mensa commit what looked like a foul. Harrison Offal gets the yellow, but the graphics for Bally Sports put up Mensa, but then they changed it back to Offal.
Okay.
But that didn't happen until a couple minutes afterwards.
Okay.
So, but then Mensa got his yellow, I think, in what, like the 37th, 36th minute, something like that. And everyone's like, wait, isn't he getting sent off? And then, And then, like, 2 minutes later, you think he gets another yellow, and then you're like, okay, Offal got the yellow in the 17th minute. Nobody got a yellow in the 35th, and then the 38th, Mensa actually got his yellow, but... The only time I've ever seen three yellows in a game, 2006 World Cup, Croatia-Australia. A Croatian player did get three yellows, and he got sent off after the third one.
They figured, okay, we've given you enough chances here, man.
Exactly.
It's time to go.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure what happened, because the first challenge by Mensa was, like, borderline red card.
Yeah.
You know,
he was aggressive in the first
and
half.
And it was – so I don't know what Harry did to somehow get that yellow card there. And, like, those two guys do not look the same. So I'm still confused what happened there.
The thing with the call on Mensa, the one where he came in super hard on Acosta, he actually got the ball, but
that doesn't even really matter.
He came in so hard that he just basically lifted him off the ground.
Right. And so that's, and it looked very clearly like he walked over to Jonathan and showed him a yellow card. And the MLS website, if you follow the like feed that they have on there, had it as Jonathan getting the yellow card until after Harrison got his second yellow card.
Right.
Because I took screenshots of them because I was like, I'm not crazy here. Like, I don't. And then it quickly
switched. No one was crazy. There was legitimate concern that Jonathan Mensah had three yellow cards and still didn't get sent off for any of them.
Yeah. Well, he played with a barely controlled fury that I don't think we've seen out of him. He plays hard, but he never gets out of his own head. He always seems very cool, and I felt like something from the get-go, and maybe it was just the early goal,
I think,
and
it
the
was.
Atmosphere, I think, just set him off, and he was playing a style that we're not necessarily used to with him, and I was concerned that he was going to hit the showers.
Yeah, I think there was definitely, you could see the frustration in Mensah and the rest of the Crew players towards that first half. Mensah probably showed his frustration the most, didn't hide his emotions as much as some of the other guys in those early parts because of the hard fouls, and you saw him bumping chests and, you know, yelling at some Cincy players. But that's what happens, and I'm sure there's some frustrations with him. When's the last time we've seen the Crew, you know, go down two goals early first half in two games in a row? It's been quite some time, and let alone the last four games, which they're on a four-game, you know, winless run, but they have three straight draws. They have not taken the lead in any one of them. They've gone down in three of them and had one scoreless draw, which many people could point out Austin was the team closer to getting a win because they had the most shots. Mm-hmm. That first half, those first 30 minutes, very much like the Revolution game, you saw the defensive lapses, and I think the biggest one, and it's unfortunate to see, but Vito Warmhor has had two pretty not good games.
What's going on with him? What can you tease out of post-game comments from Caleb Porter and so forth?
It's interesting because I've been, especially this game, on the cusp of asking Caleb about that performance. Like, even after the Austin game, I thought about it. But, like, it's hard to ask about a defender playing poorly and you get a shutout, right? So these last two games, with the way that they've come back, and even especially this one, you know, the focus was so much on what the good that happened from that game and the positives and that it just, like, fell out of place. So we talked to Caleb tomorrow, which is Tuesday. I'm gonna ask about Vito because, you know, he was obviously, he wasn't a Lucas Celarayan level signing, but he was a big deal when they signed him before last season. Played one game that he was really good against New York City. Now, as Ori pointed out when we were, I think it was on our Instagram Live, that he was playing against 10 men for the vast majority of that game.
New York City had 10 men for 87 minutes.
But, you know, he was expected to come in and be the starting center back with Jonathan. And, you know, there was no reason to think that this was a weird signing. He has the pedigree. And, you know, right now, if everyone's healthy, it's Josh Williams who would be starting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's the fact that he's still, you know, he's a very physical guy. And I don't know if it's the fact that he's still getting back from, you know, being out for almost a year and, you know, just trying to find his physicality again, you know, and his rhythm and doing all that at once. But he just looks out of sorts. I mean, that goal, you know, at the very least, foul the guy outside the box. And, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think you're getting – we said this on the Instagram. I don't think you're getting a yellow card if you just – if he beats you and just don't do anything stupid, but take him down and, you know, live to fight another day. He got beat three times on that play.
And we knew Warmhor was going to be a center back that is not going to be the fastest out there, not going to be able to run and catch up to players. So when you don't have the speed, you'd expect sort of that natural positioning, just being in the right place. We just saw that with Italy with Chiellini and Bonucci at the Euros. They're not the fastest guys. They're a bit older, but they're perfectly positioned and just help their team win a championship.
I think the downside with having him and Waylon Francis on that side is that neither one of them is that fast.
Right. Yeah.
And so that doesn't really help in the recovery. It's not like Harrison and Jonathan. And Jonathan might not be also the fastest, but he's so tall that his leg, like his sprint, kind of gets him farther. Kind of like the Alex Kurnali sprint to save a goal 1 year.
I mean, Warmhor was positioned fine for the first goal. It's just that in that situation, 1v1, he got beat by Acosta. But he had three chances to tackle him and stop the play. But, you know, Pat said it a million times more than I have. Those late runs right outside the 18, they conceded on it again.
Yeah.
They got to stop doing that. You need the midfielders to trail or guys to get goal side of these players because the Crew are giving up way too many goals in those situations.
Well, and of course, teams are going to review film just like any sport. They see that. They go, hey, here's a hole that we can exploit.
Don't run in the box. Just stay right outside the 18. You'll get an open
literally
shot.
Literally, we keep seeing the same thing from the same spot on the field over and over again.
This one was a little different, just given kind of how scramble mode they were in all of a sudden. And, you know, it's so weird off of a kickoff. I mean, I think I looked today. It was 25 seconds when the ball actually went into the net.
It was pretty stunning.
Ball over the top. You have your guys back, but then two center backs get pulled out of position. I just think, and not to excuse them, because I do think that this is a problem for the team, but I think this one was a little bit different because everything was just kind of frazzled, you know, so early in the game. Cincinnati obviously came out with a lot of energy. But, yeah, that is certainly – you know, kind of a trend with the Crew is that top of the box runner that's not being covered, and it's happened with different combinations of central midfielders. I believe it happened even when Artur was playing. So, you know, it's not like it's because they're missing guys. I don't think from kind of looking back on it.
Was Harrison fouled on that goal?
I think Brett Hillebrandt, who's on the broadcast, he was tweeting about it, and I think he made a good point that, like, probably that's a foul. But if you're a Crew fan and it's the other way, I think you would be disappointed to see that called back just because of, you know, I think I wouldn't have been surprised if they'd called it back, but I think, you know, we could be arguing the other way very easily that, you know, it didn't have anything to do with the play at the time and this, and, you know.
So. It was such a frenzy right from the jump that I didn't even see it when it happened. It was the still shot. I saw a lot later on Twitter that, of course, the still shot is different than the run of play, so.
Look, the biggest thing that stood out to me in that whole sequence wasn't as much Vito. It was when the ball got to the top of the box, Perry Kitchen was probably about 5 yards away and just put his arms behind his back to avoid a handball. But he didn't challenge that ball whatsoever. So he didn't. If he would have closed down, that might have changed, maybe not like deflected, but it might have changed the trajectory that the kick would have taken. But there was shooter is outside the box, almost at the top of the arc, and he's like inside the box, and he didn't challenge that shot whatsoever.
Just trying to block it is what you basically saw.
He was like, there was no, like, he was skinnying himself versus making himself big.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And that didn't help because it went right past him.
Well, I think look how hard the shot was hit.
It was a great goal. MLS goal of the week nominee.
You know, he had time and space.
Except for the better goal later.
Yeah, it's not going to win.
Right.
But I think our point that we're making without actually saying it, and Caleb Porter basically said this after the game, was there was a lot that went wrong on that play, and you can't have that 30 seconds into, you know, that should be the time when you're set, and you're, you know, you line up, you're set, the ball gets played long, you should be able to handle it, you know, even if Vito gets beat, you should still have, and then Jonathan, you know, there still should be guys, and so there was just a lot that went wrong. And
again, it was shocking how fast it was.
Well, and I just think, I mean, the atmosphere there was awesome. And I think similar with what happened at Austin when they came out and almost, you know, I think there was obviously a lot that went into both games on both sides. And, you know, you're the home team, you come out, you're feeding off the energy of the crowd and warm-ups and everything, and you're juiced up. And the Crew just neither time matched that intensity. Now, they didn't get scored on against Austin, and in this one they did. And, you know, so that's something that I think also needs to be addressed. Now, not every game is going to be as emotional or have a crowd like that.
Yeah, that's
what
I was going to say, because the occasion of the Crew coming to play in Austin in their new stadium for their second game, huge occasion. It's the MLS Cup champions. And for Cincinnati, hosting Hell is Real in their new stadium for the first time. You know, the Crew have played in three consecutive MLS regular season games at three new venues, which is probably the only time that's ever happened maybe in sports history.
Well, and even before that, you're closing the historic Crew Stadium.
So, in this last, nearly a month, the Crew have maybe played one regular season game that didn't feel like more than just a bigger regular season game, which was the loss to Philly.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
They've played four huge games with stakes bigger than just regular old MLS season. But, you know, now that's it. The soccer's got to be able to do the talking. They don't have all these outside stories. Sure, they're about to play their second game at Lower.com Field, but now that's their home. They have all this world-class, you know, facilities, the stadium and everything, the play is the talking point now. That's the storyline.
All right. Well, the Crew survived so much the other night. We'll talk about the atmosphere after we kind of finish going through the game, which was pretty strange. Anytime you go down a man and down 2-0, your odds, I don't know what the odds are of winning.
They played better with 10 men than they did with 11 men.
We've seen this in our lives watching the game. When a team goes down early or early-ish, it can sometimes sort of even itself out, and the team that's short a man just figures it out. And the other club takes their foot off the gas, and I felt like that's what Cincinnati kind of did. They kind of went back to being Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And they should have gone for the kill, and they didn't.
Yeah, and I think you asked Caleb, were you surprised, you, Ori, asked Caleb if you were surprised that they didn't play as offensively in the second half. Somebody asked that, and, you know, he said not really, but that I think the biggest thing was, you know, when you go down a man, it's a mentality thing, you know, especially with the way they set it up. They went to a 4-4-1. They defend in a 4-4-2, regardless of how they line up. They defend pretty much in a 4-4-2. And so, you know, that just, as Caleb explained, like, that takes away your ability to press. You can't do that. But you can still counterattack. You can still, you know, run your offense for the most part. You're just missing kind of that point man, which, frankly, they were missing anyway because they didn't have Zardes. Lucas plays as kind of a false nine.
Right.
And, you know, he was still dropping in to get the ball. He wasn't getting on the ball as early in the game. And, you know, so you just didn't have that point man anyway. So it really didn't change too much. And, you know, like Ori said, I think it, in fact, mentality-wise, got them firing, you know. And, you know, obviously the Lucas goal helps. But
for the uninitiated, what is, briefly, a false nine? What does that mean?
Yeah, so essentially, imagine a team that doesn't have, like, a set striker. So when you play with a false nine, it's kind of like having a center forward. Sometimes people equate center forward and striker. They're kind of the same position, but they're not. Striker is a little bit more of a poacher. You have someone out there that's either just going to run between the lines to just score goals. Somebody who's a target man, like, you know, Andy Carroll or Kai Kamara was kind of a target man for the Crew, where they're just there, be in the box, get headers because they're tall. Center forward has a little bit more of a drop back mentality, more so than a striker. And the team that's probably the most recently played a false nine and it really excelled with it was Spain. Mm-hmm. In 2012 at the Euros, they had Torres on their team, but he was kind of starting to not have his form when he was at Chelsea. So I remember them starting Cesc Fabregas,
right, a
center mid at the center forward position. He's not a striker. So just imagine basically playing a 4-3-3 with nobody in the three being a true out-and-out striker. So coming back defensively, dropping deeper. And I think with Zellerayan as the false nine, you kind of saw everybody was dropping deeper. So you lacked runners into the box that Caleb Porter and the Crew like to play, where you're seeing Diaz or Etienne or Matan or Santos crossing into Zardes, running down and darting. Personally, I would have switched Matan, like, I'm talking like I should manage the team, I shouldn't, but just the way that the players play, I would love to see Matan play the false nine or up front. He has that speed, and I think if you give him a situation where he just has to dribble past one guy and take a shot, he can excel. And you need Lucas Zellerayan's influence in central attacking midfield in that three line. Get the ball deeper. He needs to influence the game. He can't be out just cherry picking or just being in the center as like a striker false nine.
Yeah, well, maybe the thought was, this is our best player. Let's create as much confusion with him as we can to see if we can open up some space, get them in poor position and not communicating. And sometimes, as I understand it, you defend this. You can either defend it by just sort of, you take this space, I'll take this space. Or you can just assign a defender to chase him all over the field.
Yeah, and that job becomes much easier when you score 30 seconds into the game.
Right.
Because if you're Cincinnati, now you know, they can continue to attack for a while, but now you don't have to push numbers forward. I mean, you know, the Crew weren't doing enough movement, I think, in the first half. I think it was better in the second half. But, you know, I mean, since he just dropped guys, I mean, they knew once they had the lead, they just needed to defend. And, you know, it took...
They didn't defend.
they went up 1-0. They weren't... It wasn't the Yopstam double-decker bus like
last
year.
They went up
2-0.
Yeah. But anytime the Crew pushed numbers forward, there were guys back. I mean, they did a good job of getting numbers behind the ball. And, I mean, look at... Both Crew goals were pretty impressive. I mean, it wasn't like Cincinnati had a big defensive breakdown times.
I'd say the second goal there was a lapse.
It was
worse.
Yeah,
the midfield and the midfield defensive line were not looking.
There
was a wide open run.
It was a great pass, but there was a lot of space.
But Barry just saw, he really ran between both lines. Easy run.
I think what happened, and Colin actually, actually just I published his story right before I came over here on breaking down that goal. What they don't do is they don't get pressure on Zellerjan. He's wide open in the middle of the field for the entire play. So that's your first mistake. But then Barry does a very nice job of letting the ball run. And I think the defender thought, okay, young forward, he'll take a touch here. And so he's higher than he should have been. And, you know,
he took it perfectly.
Yeah,
he waited
for the ball, it was a great finish.
I would say 7 times out of 10, that ball might have been too strong,
yeah,
and the goalie gets to it first. But Zellerjan put it so much on Barry's foot and in between four defenders in two lines that you're like, what just happened?
Right.
And what's even, I mean, that's impressive, but the fact that Barry just took it, chipped the goalie, like didn't try to dance around
the goalie, incredibly composed, and it was just like...
Wow, yeah, that loan really did you some good.
Well, seriously, I mean, he played 7 times out in San Diego recently when he was on
this loan. Scored a game winner at one point.
Yeah, 3 goals, won a game winner. So, you know, we talked to him after the game, and he said, you know, that definitely gave him confidence to, you know, see the ball going. He compared it to, like, guys struggling with free throws. Not that he was struggling, but just, like, that gives you confidence, right? You see the ball go in the net in a basketball sense. Same with soccer. You know, he was confident in that moment because he'd been scoring goals, even though it wasn't the same level. But really impressive from him. I mean, I don't want to overreact. There's a reason he hasn't been playing and has been on loan, I think. But, you know, right now when you don't have a ton of guys up top, a guy scores a goal like that, he's probably feeling even better about himself right now. I think you've got to see what he can do. And I thought he did well when he was on the right side, holding the ball, keeping possession. He had a couple stepovers with, you know, like, it just looked like a guy who wasn't afraid of the moment coming in. And, you know, you could have brought in two guys, and Eric Hurtado, the same thing. Two guys, obviously he's a veteran, but two guys who hadn't played much, and, you know, they could have just been out there and not done a ton. And instead, both of them, I thought, had an impact.
Well, Hurtado, he could have gone around and introduced himself to several of his teammates when he came onto the field.
Pretty much.
That's another bizarre thing. We were so shorthanded that we put a player on who had not trained even a minute with this club. He shows up like, hey, you're going in the game. And thank God he's a veteran and I'll figure it out. And he did fine.
He dribbled past three guys in like the 83rd minute and looked fantastic. Caleb Porter called him like a little bulldog. So I think he can offer a lot of good energy and some good dribbling off the bench if you need to be aggressive or have a guy that can just run down the wings and try and kill a game off or just get a goal. But I mean, we were talking about it on Zoom last week, me, Brian, and Alex. You know, Miguel Barry has an opportunity to be a hero, and half joking, half serious, and he turned out to be a hero in that game.
My call was that Barry would score the winning goal and we'd win 1-0.
Okay.
So I was and
close.
Then I amended it and said that we were going to sign Kai Kamara and he would score the winning goal. So
the only Kamara that should ever come back to Columbus is Ola,
who is killing it with DC right now.
So probably not coming back to
Columbus. Yeah,
probably not coming back to Columbus.
Yeah, the resurgence at DC United. Let's circle back to the Zellerjan goal
if we could.
Because I saw something somewhere that, especially the Cincinnati goalie, stopped because they thought a foul was going to be called. But is there anything to that?
Yeah, I mean, Nagby did, he was dribbling and got tackled. I don't know if there was... It's hard to watch that goal and focus on what happens with Nagby, but he does get tackled, so that's definitely a possibility. But I mean, in the press box, I looked at Adam Jardy, the dispatch writer who was there for Jacob, and I said, "Did that go in the net? Like, just the way he hit it, and that, you know, we were almost in line with that goal, so you can't tell for sure. It just, I mean, what a strike! I think that was just pure anger, like frustration. Because if you go back, I think it's after the second goal.
He one-timed that. Like, there was no, like, setup. He just...
He ripped it.
After, I think it's the second Cincinnati goal. It may have been a foul or something. I don't know. At one point, he just took the ball and just spiked it on the ground.
Yeah, after the second goal, he just grabs the ball, smashes it in the center circle.
Yeah.
He was pissed.
And so I think, you know, that was just... There was a moment there. He just... I'm gonna hit this as hard as I can. And I think... A lot of guys in MLS would attempt that. Most of them would put it 30 yards over the goal.
Yeah.
There's not enough. We've said everything we can say about him, so I don't know how else to explain how good he is. But, I mean, you know, that was something. And like Zardes' goal against New England, you get that goal right before halftime. This one was in stoppage time. And, you know, that changes the halftime talk, as they say, and, you know, gives you a lot
more confidence. Fashion.
For sure, for sure.
And it came out of nowhere.
I mean, it came out of nowhere.
I jumped out of my seat and made a fool out of myself.
And they proved it coming out in the second half by looking significantly better than they did in the first half. Mm-hmm. In the first half, they just looked lost.
Yeah, that's...
Like, all the passes are getting cut. Nothing was landing where it needed to go. They were showing that they were missing 11 players.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, I thought that thing went just, you know, outside of the goal and hit the back and came back.
It was so sudden.
Did that actually go in?
Yeah. And I think with this team, they might not be the best goal-scoring team. They haven't been the best defensive team in the league this year. Sure, they had maybe the best offseason, but on the field, they haven't been the best team. This team, in my opinion, this Columbus Crew side, has the best mentality in Major League Soccer, and it helps when you have a player like Zellerayan to rally around.
Did you notice that after he scored that, Matan ran, grabbed the ball, ran back. Zellerayan didn't even celebrate. He was like, all right, let's go. We're going
to
finish this off.
And that, to me, Caleb Porter has helped these guys with. This team knows having a strong mentality can bring you back into games. And the fact this is a comeback more impressive than the New England comeback because they had one less man. They had 11 players missing. And these aren't just like the guys that aren't playing. These are significant players that are gone. No Zardes, no Room, no Artur, no Diaz, no Molino, no Etienne, Frazier. All these guys are gone. You've got young guys coming off the bench in Parente and Barry. And
you go down a man.
Yeah, exactly. And you come back.
An important guy. It wasn't like it was one of the guys. I was concerned that we were going to go down a couple of guys.
Yeah,
it was in a rivalry game in an opposing stadium in your home state against the opposing rival in state. To me, that match, best Hell is Real match, far and away, just in terms of entertainment, that match is the birth of the rivalry, in my opinion. Now it's a rivalry.
Yes.
Like a real one.
Since we're talking about the birth of the rivalry, because this will go down that path too. One, we haven't really talked much about how Porter's tactical changes and substitutions were incredibly effective in that second half.
Yeah.
In really changing the dynamic of the game. And everybody he brought on, did he make all five?
Yeah.
I think so.
Abdul Salam.
Everybody he brought on contributed. Abdul Salam had stops in the back. Boubacar Keita provided some blocks.
Keita helped a lot.
Obviously.
It was the one that they looked at that was...
A little sus.
Yeah, I mean, he got the ball. You know, it was a good tackle ultimately, but it's just you see that in real time, and it's like, like if they call that a PK on the field, I don't know if it gets overturned, but he got the ball. I mean,
he has no fear.
No, he does not.
And we saw that in the Champions League when he slipped and fell, and they scored in Old Crew Stadium, and he just like okay,
yeah,
and just carried on and played his game, and that showed me that for as young a guy as he is. Such mental toughness that we're used to in Westerville, of course.
Yes.
The kind of mental fortitude that we have in Westerville.
The Westerville.
Makes me proud.
Are we going to talk about it? It's the big elephant.
What? Porter?
Porter shushing the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
Porter himself wants this to be a rivalry, and he made it even more of a rivalry and has become the villain of FC Cincinnati.
He does not mind being the wrestling heel at all.
No. He is a toxic FIFA player. Don't give him a PlayStation because he will shush and piss people off if he's playing foot champions, as they like to call it. But he just said, shut up. We tied this game. We got the point. And then he shushed again when he walked off the Zoom, and then the quote of the year, the best.
Yeah, it was great.
It was so passive-aggressive.
Just saying how he was disappointed that they didn't bring three points home for the Crew fans, but he's happy that Cincinnati fans are going home very disappointed.
Oh, and they left in
a
hurry.
And then he walks off the Zoom and just goes like this with the shushing.
They left in a hurry, didn't they?
And it's funny because last week, he, gave the coach speak of, this game is about another 3 points for us, and we realize how important it is for the fans, so we want to do that. And then he was like, well, what did I say about Austin? I circled that twice, so I guess I circled this one 3 times, But he didn't want to make it bigger than it was before the game. But, I mean, you saw that, how much that meant. And even if you go back to last year when they lost to Cincinnati, he was pissed. I mean, he's pissed after every loss. The guy hates losing, but you could tell that, that's not a team you should lose to anyway with how bad they were last year. This is a better Cincinnati team, but yeah, he was angry, and you know,
not as angry as post Monterey 2-2 draw angry. Well, sure. I mean, yeah, that's going to be the angriest you might see Caleb Porter ever in a press conference with the Columbus Crew.
And as fiery as Caleb Porter is, I look at Jaap Stam, and he became increasingly more bewildered as the second every shot of him was like, what do I do? What do I do?
I think he was confused by the referee, to be honest.
Okay. He did get a yellow card.
Yeah, he did. Oh, wait, I think he was definitely confused by what the referee was doing. And maybe that's just like a welcome to the pro experience.
But tactically, and we talked about this.
The MLS experience. He knows how pro referees are supposed to. Oh, you mean pro?
No, no, I mean pro, like the referee organization.
It's on him how Cincinnati did not win this game, though. They had everything going in their favor. Yeah. Had they just kept the foot on the gas, it could have easily been 4-0.
Yeah, and this whole weekend with all the soccer, England, the same thing. Go up early, but then you play negative. You can't depend on defending for 88, 89, 90 minutes with a 1-0 or 2-0 lead and expect to potentially get the win.
Especially at home.
Yeah, and if the
in front of that crowd.
I know, and if the team's attacking well that you're playing against, try to counter it a little bit. Play a little bit out of the back, keep the ball a little bit more. Like with 11-10, you should be able to retain most of the possession. But that second half, I've never seen a team with 10 men dominate against a team with 11 that well.
Do you think Jaap Stam would have put two guys on to take penalty kicks without them touching the ball? Because,
oh, boy.
Because
I think
most coaches don't do that.
I hope not. poor England. I feel horrible for Rashford, Sancho, and Saka. God, but I don't feel bad for Cincinnati. I don't think Caleb Porter does either.
No,
and the possession, as we look at the match stats at the end, 50-50?
How are you going to have 50-50 possession?
That's incredible.
With
That's
a man up in 45 minutes. I mean, to me, the most insane stat is the two keepers combined made one save.
Yeah.
Evan Bush had one save. Vermeer had zero saves.
Yeah. Six yellow cards for... Well, it says here one yellow card for Columbus, but that doesn't make any sense.
Oh, here's the stat. The Crew had an XG in that game above one. That's unprecedented territory for them in this season so far. They had a 1.15 XG in that game, higher than Cincinnati.
Which expected goals.
Yeah, expected goals, yeah. Which means they made the best chances to score in that game, which, again, just shows the heart of the mentality, the way that they played. Three straight draws, but now you got to get those 3 points, especially in the new home. Got to get that first win.
All right. I don't know where Murph went.
I think he went to get beer? Food or beer or something. I mean, we are in Saucy Brewworks.
Saucy Brewworks. He just sort of was led away like a cartoon where the aroma comes out of a window and grabs you by the nose, and he just floated away.
Yeah, Pat Murphy has floated away, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I need Murph back here because before we put a bow on Cincinnati, I wanted to just talk about the stadium and the atmosphere, but why don't we take a quick break?
That sounds
good. We'll get Murph back here.
We need to do quick fire questions for him to see which of the three new stadiums is the best one.
Yeah, he's well traveled. So when we come back, we'll look at the Cincinnati Stadium experience and then look ahead to NYCFC this coming Saturday at lower.com field, which is pretty nice.
It's very nice.
Yes.
I think, I would say it is.
We are back in the Mass Report pod as we corralled Murph, who went off to order. What'd you order? A pizza here at Saucy?
I was tracking down my pizza.
Okay. Well, they're making it special
yes,
for you.
They
and they're
going
to bring it to you here in just a few moments.
That's why they're the best.
We got you back here at the table because before we finish up our talk about the Cincinnati game, so much every Crew game, there's so much to talk about. There's so much drama, which is great. Gives us something to talk about. But the atmosphere on TV, anyway, looked... I gotta say, tremendous.
Yeah, it was great, really great. So the stadium is located, if you're familiar with Cincinnati, it's the West End, so it's just outside of Over the Rhine, which is like their big bar restaurant.
Would that be like their short north?
Yeah, very similar.
Very much.
And so that area, I think, from my understanding, the stadium is part of helping to continue to gentrify that neighborhood and like bring it up with over the Rhine and some of the other areas around there. So, like, three-fourths of the area around the stadium is all, like, nice apartments and things. And then, like, one corner around it is not so nice, which is where I happened to park before I went to go get my credential. I was like, oh, this is a weird spot to have the stadium. And then I walked, and I was like, oh, okay, it's just not – everything hasn't been fixed up around here yet. So a cool little spot to put the stadium. And I think once – similar to the stadium here, once things get done all around there, it'll be cool. There was a bar right across the street that apparently just got built for the opening of the stadium called The Pitch. Okay. And I was talking to Patrick Brennan, the Inquirer writer, and he told me that that's becoming the Cincinnati soccer bar. And he's like, I think it'll be the place people go for EPL games and stuff. So a cool thing to have right by the stadium. But the stadium itself, you know, the outside looks awesome. The light stuff that they can do on the side of their stadium. They were doing some of that as fans walked up. As the supporters come in, the Bailey, they stop and let off blue smoke bombs, and there's fireworks that go off before they enter the stadium, which was cool. And then, yeah, the atmosphere was great. You know, I didn't get to walk around really as much as I would have liked, just because of how things are set up, but the press box was very nice. They could open the top of the window so you could hear it, and it was, you know, it was definitely loud. I talked to one of the guys who works for the team. He was sitting in the press box, and he was down on the field, and he said, like, the acoustics are very weird and everything's very echoey, but he's like, it makes it very hard to communicate down mm-hmm. there. And I can only imagine on the field how that was for the players. And I walked afterwards. I just, after the game, went to see how far they would let me walk around, underneath the stadium. And, you know, like it at the stadium here, they've got, you know, this nice bar restaurant that leads directly out to the field. There's a path for those people. I assume that's where the team comes out, but it leads directly out, and it's this big, nice bar. And, everything was very nice. I honestly think, these two stadiums in Ohio, and from what I've heard about LAFC Stadium, obviously I've not been there, I think those are the three best stadiums in MLS. And to have two of them in Ohio for a team that, you know, had the first soccer-specific stadium but definitely fell behind on MLS-level stadiums, and a Cincinnati team who's only been in the league 3 years, that's pretty impressive. And
it's crazy.
You know, really good commitment from ownership of both teams, which, you know, I don't think we ever thought we'd see with two teams in Ohio.
All soccer fans in Ohio, I think, should have so much pride and should be so proud. This is the soccer capital of the Midwest, this state, I think. With two facilities like that, you're seeing the sport that's has grown here. I mean, in Columbus, soccer has just been such a part of the community for the last quarter century, even longer. And now that you have these two unbelievable stadiums in the same state, just about 2 hours away from each other, it's honestly amazing. It really is.
Well, it makes sense, too, because, you know, when my daughter was playing club, we never went to Cleveland to play a tournament, yeah. ever. Well, we'd go to Cincinnati right. twice a year. We'd go yeah. to Dayton twice a year.
Yep.
You know, that's, you know, if we weren't playing here in Columbus, we were in those two cities. So that culture has built for years from the ground up, and now we're seeing yeah. the fruits.
And just in general, the state of Ohio, I would say, is one of those states where there really is a deep culture for so many different sports. Like with Texas, you think of really football. You know, with a state like Indiana, you think about basketball. But Ohio has a deep culture of soccer, you know, basketball, football, baseball, hockey now with the Blue Jackets for the last 25 years. And so that's what makes Ohio so unique and golf too, with the Memorial and everything like that.
And credit to the Noron Tour group that was down there.
Absolutely.
You know, like they do at most stadiums, they stuck them up in the corner, and, you know, I don't think they were the cheap seats, because I can't imagine there are too many cheap seats in that stadium, but they were loud. I mean,
yeah, you could hear them on the broadcast.
Yeah, you could hear them at the game.
I understand.
And I was, the part of the press box I was in was definitely closer to that, but, you know, down 2-0, they were loud. After the red card, they were loud. When Lucas scored, they were certainly loud, and Miguel, the same thing. Some of the crew guys who traveled down there that didn't play went and sat up there, I guess. Somebody told me Josh Williams was up there.
Oh, that's good.
Andy Morris was up there, too.
Okay,
awesome.
Yeah, and then they went down and hugged Miguel and gave him a good supporting.
Yeah. But yeah, that was, yeah, I've seen a lot of Noron tours and there's been some very good ones, but that was awesome, especially for a Friday night, you know.
Yeah.
People I assume take a half day of work or something to get down there, and maybe not. I guess Cincinnati's close enough you could make it, but
you know, yeah, when I'm done doing the dishes, I pull the drain and all the water goes out. That's what happened to all the Cincinnati fans when the game was over. Someone pulled the drain. And all that was left in the stadium, I saw the pictures, were the Noron tour.
Yeah, just insert Alex talking about Cincinnati right now in the podcast. Cause
yeah, Sam, you can just dub Alex from last year in.
Or we put the Caleb Porter quote in there. That should be our intro now, I feel like. That could easily be.
Well,
I know where that video is. I could definitely get it from there.
There's, you know, a tie in this game can be interpreted so many different ways depending on how you arrive at that. And obviously being the road team, you're always happy with that 1 point. It's hard to win on the road. It really is. Look at Caleb Porter. Two titles, what, nine
road wins.
Nine
total.
Road wins. I mean, it's hard to win on the road. So you get a point, you feel happy about it. This felt like a win.
Yeah.
And for Cincinnati, it was a devastating loss.
Because it was different than last week. Like, I feel like last week both teams, the New England game, I mean, I feel like both teams probably left feeling okay about things. Like New England, you probably
it's
expected
a good team.
Yeah, and you probably expected to go on the road if you're New England to a new stadium and hope to get a point. Now the fact that you were up 2-0 in the first half, okay, maybe we can get a win out of this, but I think all in all you're probably okay with that result. And for the crew, you're definitely okay with it. You would have loved to open the stadium with the win, but again, being down 2-0, coming back, even though you're at home against the top team in the East, I think you take that. And but this one, for sure, it was, you know, advantage Columbus coming back and getting that draw.
Real when do we? Oh, go ahead.
I was going to just, you know, you got to interrogate Pat here because he's had the unique experience. You're probably one of, you might be the only person other than maybe like Don Garber. You and Don Garber are probably the only people on earth that have been to all three
well,
of these
Well, no,
stadiums.
I mean, the players that played in the
Fine.
Games.
Fine. You,
Caleb,
Don
his
Garber,
coaching staff, Bez.
Columbus Crew players.
Yeah, I mean, the Austin has been to Cincinnati. They haven't been to Columbus
yet,
I guess.
But there you,
so
crew players, Don Garber and Pat Murphy, the people on earth who have been to Q2 Stadium, Lower.com Field, and TQL Stadium. With your first impressions of each, which one is the best?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always going to be partial to Lower.com Field for sure. You know, obviously, we were able to tour that a lot, multiple times for different tours leading up to that game. So, you know, I've seen everything in that. The Cincinnati Stadium, which I would say is probably right there. You know, I didn't get to see all kind of the amenities of it. But, you know, I think both definitely are a little bit above Austin's. And I think if you look just at the pricing of both of them, it's clear, you know, what was put into them. And not that Austin's was bad. I think Austin is just that next tier below, which is still very good. So, yeah, I mean, I think Lower.com and TQL are very much on par, but, you know, I'll give the edge to what I'm still calling New Crew Stadium.
DC Field is catching on.
Yeah, I'll give the edge to the hometown team.
Lodoco.
Or as Sam has affectionately called it, the Dot.
the dot.
Are we actually going to start calling it the Dot Field?
I don't know, but there's a big blue dot everywhere, so the dot's
true.
Not a bad thing.
Fair enough.
It's a square dot. Actually, I want to say something real quick. As I'm watching that on TV, and I had some friends that were down in Cincinnati, they were like, yeah, it feels like it's bigger than the New Crew Stadium.
It is. I mean, it's 26,000.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's 26,000.
It's bigger, yeah.
Wow.
Which, I mean, if not on the non-broadcast side, there were definitely some empty, like the side that we were on, there were definitely some empty seats. Now, I don't know, you know, like when at the old Crew Stadium, I don't know if people were walking around, if there's a bar that people can see the field from or something like that, but you know, 26,000 is a lot to ask for an MLS team. You know, I mean, obviously Seattle and Atlanta get that done pretty easily, but yeah, it's definitely a bigger stadium capacity wise.
Wow, I did not know that. It looks similar capacity, but you know, looks can be deceiving. That's probably too big.
Yeah, I mean, I would think
for MLS and most likely.
Yeah. My thought is always do like what Kansas City and Portland have done, where like you build it what you need and then have room to be able to, you know, Portland's already expanded. I believe when Kansas City built their stadium, I think there's a way that if they need to in a certain amount of time, they can expand it. You know, Kansas City's averaged over a sellout since they opened that stadium.
And it looked so small on TV last night, didn't it?
Yeah, for Gold Cup.
I mean, it is.
And they didn't draw. And obviously, U.S. soccer charges too much for tickets. Sure. But, you know, the atmosphere wasn't great.
It was even emptier during the Canada game.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, there's not a huge crowd of people in Kansas City that want to go see Canada play Martinique.
Yeah.
It was more entertaining than the U.S. game.
Oh, yes, it was, because Canada won 4-1.
It was so boring. I thought Etienne looked good. I thought Jossie obviously had the assist. He looked good, but
Etienne played as a free-roaming 10 for Haiti. Yeah, but yeah, in terms of entertainment, it wasn't great. You would expect on Thursday the U.S. against Martinique. The U.S. should be able to
win that game. Bring Jossie back in. I mean, do they really need him?
That's a chance for him a chance for Jossie to score 6 goals probably in this tournament. So
I have to assume that once DK is fully back, fit and healthy, he's going to be the guy. I was honestly surprised he didn't start. You know, not only because I think Greg wants to see what he can do with him, but also this is kind of his like final advertisement with the transfer window open now. To move over to Europe. So I would not be surprised if he starts taking over. But Jossie, I thought, played pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah. He knows, you know, obviously he knows what Greg wants him to do out there.
Yeah. So. Absolutely. Well, let's talk about New York City FC. How many people do they fit in Yankee Stadium, Maury, for a NYCFC game? As long as we're talking about attendance. How many people do you cram in there for a soccer game?
Oh, God, I don't even know. I mean, the crew haven't played there in what feels like an eternity.
Have they played there?
Been as long
they
as
have played there. They beat Cincinnati 5-0 at Yankee Stadium back in April.
Okay.
So, but looking at New York City, just in terms of their form, 3 wins since that loss to Columbus back at Red Bull Arena.
You talk about devastating losses.
Oh, God.
That was a heart.
Sean Johnson just was like, oh, come on, Lucas. Why'd you have to do that to us, man? 2 free kicks in the last 10 minutes.
Ripped their heart out. Yeah, and that was almost 2 months ago.
And that was that's the first road win for the crew in a year and a half and still the only one right now. But since that loss for New York City, 3 wins out of 5 is not too bad. Beat LAFC, beat Atlanta.
We wore black against NYCFC, right?
Correct. Yes. That's the last time
that explains it.
Oh, no. The last time the crew wore black was in the last game.
On the road.
Yeah, that's the last time black on the road. Yep.
Yes. So that explains it, and it confirms my theory so far.
Yeah, and if the crew wear gray this weekend against New York City, it'll be 5 straight games.
And they will.
No, they are going to wear gray?
I think,
I don't doubt it.
I think they
so
will wear
gray.
So
when's the next time they're going to wear black?
Unless they have to. I have to imagine they push these. Thank you. They push these kits as much as possible now that they, you know, because it's the stadium kit. You're going to wear it at home at the very least.
So. All right. Well, you know, I personally, I don't think there's anything to that. It's just shirt. I don't think they look bad.
I think it's not about the look. I think now it's become a psychological issue.
Okay, I'm
dead serious.
To be fair, they've come back twice in those jerseys.
Right, but they've also allowed 2 goals.
I don't think they care what they wear. I don't think they care.
They can wear training jerseys.
Yeah, you put pennies on them, right?
Yeah, but
so much for look good, play good.
Yeah, by the way, we'll see.
It's all right.
Sorry, I have to make this small comment.
All right, well,
Pat's eating a pizza. He's got lettuce on it, which is an interesting
thing. It's a Euro pizza.
Okay.
Euro pizza.
Yeah,
it's really good.
All right. There you go, Saucy Brewers.
It's an odd pizza. Yeah, I'm sure it's good because
I've
it's
made
Saucy
many
Brewers.
Euro pizzas. I've never put lettuce on mine.
I've never seen lettuce
on
pizza.
I didn't ask for lettuce.
Lettuce on pizza is
really
good.
Is that a taco pizza?
Like a taco pizza.
Yeah.
Taco pizza with shredded lettuce. It's a Euro pizza.
I know, but what does that mean?
It's got Euro meat on it, and feta cheese, and tomatoes, and red onions.
This is riveting crew podcast.
Riveting.
Yes,
I mean, it's saying
we're enticing people to come to Saucy Brew Works because
well,
the pizza here.
You don't
is really
have
good.
To get lettuce on your pizza
no,
here. At Saucy.
You get a veggie supreme like I do, and you get some good veggies. But it's easier to say Euro pizza than it is to say NYCFCSCABCDFG. Great transition there. 3 wins out of their last 5. They beat LAFC, Atlanta, DC United. Coming off a 2-1 loss to Montreal, who, by the way, might go back to Canada finally.
Wow.
It looks like sports are finally going to be back there for these American, Canadian,
that's good
North
for
Americans.
Them.
Yeah.
And good for all the – I want the Canadian teams back in Canada. Their fans have, I'm sure, missed them a great deal.
Well, the hockey teams were doing it, right?
Yeah.
I know they had to get special exemption or whatever,
sure.
But I don't know why.
Well, it is hockey. You ever been to Canada?
Well, they only had the special exemption for the Western Conference.
Right.
Well, against Vegas for Montreal and then against the Lightning for the Stanley Cup, but then they just played Canadian teams the whole season. But I'm trying to find the last time New York City played at Yankee Stadium.
That's all right. This is a huge game.
They haven't played there this year.
No, they have.
Have they?
They played Cincinnati there.
They played Cincinnati
there. I think
but
they played one more.
Yeah. This is a huge match.
I haven't been to Yankee Stadium in 2 months. May 15th was the last
time.
They're
weird.
Playing at Red Bull Arena all the time.
I think they're just sort of ghosting Yankee Stadium at this point, aren't
to
they?
To be fair, they should. It's the worst MLS stadium in the league.
It's terrible, and they've accepted the fact that they can't find a plot of land in the five boroughs to put a stadium. It's too expensive. Yeah. The land is too expensive. You know, where are they going to put it?
No.
It's going to be very interesting if they are New York City FC playing outside of New York City.
Like, well, I mean,
at least the New York Red Bulls, like other
the Jets and Giants, made
right,
it work.
Basically.
But they have specifically named themselves New York City. We're New York City's team. You know, that was kind of their whole thing when they came in the league, and then
it's true they're the only city.
Or if they just share Red Bull Arena going forward.
Yeah, they're the only team that says like New York City in their name. Everybody else is just New York or New Jersey.
You know, that also has to do with the city affiliation, Manchester City affiliation. But
more than it is than New York.
Yeah, Melbourne right. City, too.
Well, let's look at the table here. This is such an important match. Here we are level with not only NYC, but also Red Bulls. DC right on our tail at 16 points. Right above us, Nashville and Montreal at 19. Philly at 20. Orlando 21. And the front-running
and
Rebs
play Nashville.
At 24
And you play
points.
Nashville on Wednesday.
Yep. We play Nashville on Wednesday. There's no rest for the weary. And really, I think it's more important to talk about what sort of side we're going to put on the field on Saturday at lower.com field than it is whatever New York City is going to. We know what they're going to bring. They're going to bring physicality. They're going to have a burr in their saddle about losing to us at home the way they did,
yeah.
Or home in quotes. They're going to be fired up for this game. What are we going to be able to put on the field on Saturday?
Well, it'll be a side that doesn't include Harrison Offal.
Yeah, that's the thing. Harrison Offal, add him to the other million crew players that aren't available for this game because he's suspended. I don't think they're going to appeal it. So you would expect Saad Abdul-Salam is probably going to start it right back in that game.
I don't have a problem with that.
Might not be a bad thing.
I like him.
He's fine.
I like him.
He's shown very good shifts in that position. He's done a really good job, and I think Caleb Porter agrees that Abdul-Salam has been really good. So.
Does Vito sit and Buba get the start?
I would think so. Well, I wouldn't think so. I don't know.
Maybe because of the short rest, because the Nashville game's on a Wednesday, you might see Buba start one of these
Buba
games.
Buba done think, to not
yeah,
earn
at this
a
point,
start.
I think, unless Josh Williams gets back, I think you have to try Buba because Vito's just, I mean, we didn't even talk about in the second half, you know, shortly after halftime, he had the ball with no pressure on him in the six and passed it right to one of the Cincinnati attackers, and you know, fortunately, he recovered and made a tackle. But he just, you know, it doesn't look right now. And you know, you need to stop giving up goals. It's time. You're not taking Jonathan out. So
yeah.
You know, I would feel like they need to do something.
Yeah, and I'm sure Caleb Porter will mention it throughout the week. Now they have to play three games in 7 days because they play New York City this Saturday, Nashville Wednesday, and then they go to Atlanta to play Atlanta United the following Saturday. So 3 games in 7 days.
It's a rough schedule. Well,
with
beyond,
all these players out.
Beyond the back line, what are we looking at?
Nagbe for sure.
Oh, of course.
I don't know if they play a false nine again. I think you can start Barry. I mean, now
well,
if Hurtado.
Let's start Barry. Let's just start him.
Start Barry or Hurtado as the striker. But Aloy Room is no longer in the Gold Cup. If you people listening to this don't know, Curaçao had a COVID outbreak.
Oh.
That's something I'm going to ask about tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, he can't play then.
He still has to quarantine.
It depends, yeah. I mean, the league rules now are 2 negative tests, you're back. So if I don't know if he's one of the people that tested positive. I assume because he was around people that did.
I thought the outbreak was before he got there. But maybe I could be wrong.
So more than 50% of their players tested positive this weekend, which is why Curaçao had to drop out of the tournament and were replaced by Guatemala. Yeah. So in a 20-some man team, that's about 11 or 12 players that were tested COVID positive right before their first game, and then they drop out. But even if, though Aloy Room is technically back for the crew, he's no longer on international duty, I don't expect him to play on Saturday. I would think the earliest he comes back is maybe next weekend for Atlanta.
Atlanta's probably
I feel like he's the least of our concerns. I got
yeah,
no
Evan
problem
Bush
with
is fine.
Yeah, he's fine.
Yeah. The wings is going to be interesting because Pedro and Matan might have to start on the wing each one of these next three games, especially if...
Well, and I mean, I know there's not a lot of options at the wings right now, but you saw Pedro move back to left back late in that game. He is the best left back on this team right now.
You put him ahead of Francis?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, in terms of he plays just as well defensively, and
his overlaps
are good. Right, he's giving you something offensively. And even if Milton's healthy right now, I mean, you're going to start Milton if he's healthy. But I think Pedro's played the best at left back of anybody who's played that position.
So who plays left wing after
that? Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is you don't have the option to do that right now. But I think as they start to get wingers back, maybe that's the – maybe you start to see more of Santos at left back and, you know, other guys playing that left wing position. This would be going forward.
There's so much roster drama here that I've completely lost track of Artur. Where is he in his
I mean, there's not really an update. The injury is just like a chronic thing. So my understanding is he's just having to rest and they continue to evaluate him. You know, there's no timetable because it's just seeing how he does. And I think it's smart, you know, if you know you have other guys that can play there, obviously you'd love to have him, but when you really like to have him is the end of the season, playoff push, postseason, and you'd rather him be fully healthy then.
I saw him on TV in games on more than one occasion where he just looked like he didn't feel good.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he hasn't been himself the whole year.
So I think this is probably the right thing to do. As hard as it is, you know, it's a long season, and we're doing fine.
Yeah.
And you want to be able to make that push at the end, which is sort of what this team is built for.
And based on how close the standings are,
it's crazy.
That push is going to start in October or September because the Crew is 4 points back of second place, and they're in eighth. Like, there's a lot of good teams in the Eastern Conference this year.
Yeah. What do we, just to kind of refresh our memories, what are we concerned about with NYC?
Just the mixture of, you know, good direct attacking talent. I mean, you look at their best players, Castellanos, Medina, I would say are probably the guys you're watching out for. I believe Medina's the one who scored against Columbus in the first game. He's been their best player. Maxi Morales is their creative attacking number 10 guy. You know, every MLS team has to have a number 10 who's under 5'7".
Shortest player almost ever.
Yeah.
Likely Argentinian.
Likely
Argentinian.
You know. Props to the short people. Go short people.
How tall is he?
He's 5'4", 3.
Oh, he's Muggsy Bogues.
Which is my height. So, yeah, I would say.
You guys are too young to remember Muggsy Bogues.
I know what Muggsy Bogues is.
We're going to need him and Matan to stand next to each other.
Right.
Exactly. Muggsy Bogues is a monster.
I can't remember if it was Matan. Whoever came out for Hurtado, and I was like, oh, my gosh, Hurtado's huge. And then I realized, oh, no, he's just standing next to Alex Matan.
He's also a big dude.
For sure.
Yeah, he's built, though. No question.
Yes,
when he went on the field,
much.
I go, he's going to rip that jersey. Yeah.
But New York City's a good team. I mean, they're well coached. They're well disciplined. 19 goals, 13 conceded this year. So in that middle of the table, they actually have the best goal difference between fourth place and 14th place. They have the second best goal difference in the East behind Orlando. So that's something to look at and be concerned about. But don't think the Crew are going to be able to get away with another win on just two free kicks. That seems unlikely.
No.
We're going down 2-0 in the first
game. Again, yeah.
No, I don't. Yeah, those are two things. I mean, really, it's on us. We cannot surrender goals early anymore. We can't do it.
Yeah, and I think we talked earlier about Austin and Cincinnati using the crowd at their home stadium in these early games there. I think the Crew need to do that. You know, hopefully it's another sellout crowd. Hopefully the atmosphere is as awesome as it was 2 weeks ago. And, you know, they can come out the aggressive team and, you know, I don't know if you necessarily find one early, but use that energy to kind of fuel you early in the game. Especially with this team right now with the lack of attackers, if you can get a lead, especially if you can get a two-goal lead, you know, then you have defensive guys you can bring on. I mean, obviously you're down Harrison Awful, but I know you have plenty of other guys who, even central midfielders, who can play more defensively and things like that. Not saying that the Crew are going to sit back if they get a lead. That's not what they do. But, you know, you'd rather get an early goal always, but especially right now.
Well, I think this is going to be a street fight. That's the way I feel it. I mean, New York City loves to play physically anyway. They're going to have something stuck in their craw based on that last game. They just have to – I don't look at them as being a team that's going to surrender what they did to us as far as the free kicks in the last matchup. They learned their lesson.
Yeah, and in that game, New York City was the better team by far. That was one of Columbus's worst games, I'd say, of the season. They were not generating anything offensively. They got those two free kicks. Lucas De La Rayan has shown time and time again in the past year and a half that he can just take a game by the hands and literally win it for the Crew or come back for them. And to me, he's probably the most talented player ever to wear black and gold in the history of this team. No question about it.
Maybe what they should do on the road is play poorly, and then they can get wins, as opposed to playing well and not getting wins. Maybe that's
makes sense.
Maybe that's what Caleb Porter hasn't done throughout his career.
I see. I mean,
that way.
That's how it gets meta. Well, the next time they're on the road is in Atlanta at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, so that will be another tough atmosphere to play in, and a big field too. So we'll see how they do on the road in that game. But you got to start picking up the points at this stadium. You got to get a win at home. It's important. And none of the teams in their new stadiums, the Crew, Cincy, and Austin have – or no, Austin won a game
Austin
there.
Won.
Austin's
but
the only one that's won a game.
But it took, what, three, 4 games?
3 games. Cincy has played 4 games at their new stadium, haven't won. Crew's only played one, but at least win one of New York City and Nashville. Hope to not lose one of them. I think 4 points is a best-case scenario, in my opinion. I think it's tough to win 2 straight games like that against teams like New York City and Nashville. The one bright side for the Nashville game is Walker Zimmerman is not going to be there. He's their best defender.
Oh,
he's with the United States.
Yeah.
New York City, I don't think, is missing
almost
too many
scored
games.
Last night.
Almost. Yeah. He almost
he's
scored twice
such an
last
impressive
night.
Player.
Yeah. So we'll see how it goes on Saturday. But important at home, get these wins. They're tied on points, and New York City has the game in hand this time. So this is mighty important to get a win.
All right. Well, I think the whole thing really turns on me trying to get down there early enough to go to Betty's to have a shot and a beer. And I think if I can do that, then victory is at hand.
All right. Well, it's on you.
It's on me. Betty's is pretty busy for the first game, so I better get started a bit early on
9
Saturday.
9 a.m.?
I don't think they open at 9, but maybe they do. You never know.
If you're standing at the door waiting for them to open, you'll be the first one in. Just camp out.
I can get away with that.
Camp out like
we'll
the,
see.
The
I'll do what
Cameron
I can.
Crazies.
I'll do what I
it's
can.
It's unfortunate, though, that now these weekends of Crew games, there's not soccer on to kill the time before the Crew game with the Euros or anything. It's so this is always such a depressing time when the Euros are over, honestly. You got to find all the other sports to watch as well.
I imagine people will find ways to keep themselves busy before
yes,
Crew
I'm game. Sure. We'll just start the march to the stadium a bit early.
You started at 6 a.m., 12 hours.
Just march from Cincinnati.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, let's see what we think about this match with NYCFC, our second game and our new digs. And I just love that place so much already. I want to go early and just sit in my seat and watch them warm up. I mean, it's just
I want to go
it.
On a non-game day and hang out at the pub.
For, is like, it open?
Just pub. No the.
Is it open?
At pub.
Okay, thank you, Ohio State.
No, it's MLS. Like Crew SC. I'll put it at the bottom of your emails.
Right. I actually don't know if it's open yet on, like, non-game days. I think it should be.
Should be.
Close.
They said that
already.
Patio, there's going to be, like, people doing yoga on that patio, I remember, during our tour.
They're planning all sorts of events once everything is actually somewhat complete. Which I think
thought they were
going to
have a watch party last week, but they did not, apparently.
Yeah, I think they're still. Because they're still doing stuff. So what happened with the watch party, the first watch party, is that they opened the stadium. And there's still construction going on. I think they want to make sure that they have most everything done before this coming game.
Yeah.
So probably that's
I think opening the stadium and letting people in for away games makes a lot of sense. Like, I don't know, unless you have something else going on at the stadium, I don't know why you wouldn't. Like, when we took the tour, they said they wanted to do the away watch parties out in the plaza, but they probably wouldn't open the stadium up. And I thought, why not? Like, I mean, I understand that there's, like, when you have an event at a thing like that, you have to get a certain amount of security depending on how many people and obviously, you'd have to have concession stand workers and stuff, and, you know, there's the cleaning after. There's a lot of things that people don't think about, but to me, it's worth it. You know, you even if you want to charge people a little bit to come out, I think people would pay $5 to go to a watch party at this stadium.
That'd be
and
so much fun on a nice summer night.
Yeah, it's like
spend a weekend in downtown.
The screens are so beautiful.
Well, and you look at, like, the what, especially this year. You know, I mean, it's been happening in the NBA and NHL playoffs. The watch parties they've got at their arenas. And even with, like, stuff at the Euros, you know, because it was obviously all over the place, people were doing watch party. I mean, I think that's something they should really embrace. You know, you think back to 02 here and at Old Stadium and the World Cup watch parties they had there and how popular that was.
And the hours were weird.
Right.
You know,
and
that
so,
was in
I'm too young to remember, so I'm kind of curious. Like, I remember waking up at 5 a.m. to watch World Cup games in 2002. Were there, like, hundreds of people showing up at Crew Stadium to watch World Cup games at 5 a.m.?
Yeah, I mean, for the U.S. games, it was nuts.
Yeah.
Like was I was.
Did they do it in a tent also?
They did the tent, and then so depending on how big the crowd was, right. like it would be in the tent, and then they expanded outwards if they needed to. But yeah, I mean, I went for all but one of the U.S. games, and it was great. I mean, the first U.S. game was the earliest one they played, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that was a 3 a.m. against Portugal. They won 3-2.
Right,
yeah.
And so that was the one. I don't know how many people would have actually shown up for that, but for the rest of the games, and like I remember the final too. The final was maybe the most crowded. But yeah, things like that.
It
I think
be a word.
They talk about wanting to use that stadium and making a community thing.
Yeah,
that's a great way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Utilize it.
I totally agree. Let's make our picks, and then we'll let Murph finish the rest of his pizza
with lettuce,
The lettuce and the onions. It's European style. I didn't know. I did not know that was a thing.
European, Brian.
European.
Euro.
Yeah. I got some leftover pepperoni pie at home, so I think I'll dig into that. And next time I'm here, I don't know, what pizza should I get, Ori?
I get the Veggie Supreme. My dad gets it one every time I come here now as his dinner, so I like the Veggie Supreme a lot.
All right, I'll try that next.
Get a slice after we're done here.
All right, that sounds good. All right, let's make our picks, and we'll get out of here, and we'll see what happens. Let's go to you first, Sam.
Ooh, caught me off guard. I wasn't quite ready for that. You know, I'm going to say 1-0 Crew.
Kind of my headspace about this game. Ori?
Well, I famously picked Cincinnati to beat Columbus on Friday.
Boo,
well,
this
that's
man.
That's not very, exactly a way to
very,
gain fame.
Very famously on the Massive Reports predictions. I'll have to send that email out pretty soon. I don't think the Crew will lose. I think they're going to tie again. Four straight draws.
No.
I think are they going to go down 2-0?
No, I think they go up 1-0 and concede in the second half against New York City and tie 1-1.
Rip my heart out
in
section 107.
Four consecutive draws. I'm saying 1-1.
Is that 2007 all over again?
Oh, yeah, when they just drew all the games.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
For Bart, I'm just gonna give it 4-0 Crew.
4-0?
Josh Williams with the hat trick off the bench.
Two bicycle kicks.
Bart didn't actually give that information to me. I'm just guessing here.
Right.
Yeah. I'm going to say 2-1 Crew, same as when they were in New York City. I think Caleb sticks with Vito, and there's another, not a calamitous mistake, but just that leads to them giving up a goal. I don't know if they give up a goal first or not, but I think they do get a win, get your first win at the new stadium.
See, I think I'm going to go with Sam here. I think that it's 1-0 Crew. I think that Barry scores again.
Ooh.
And I think Booba starts and does Westerville proud. And the defense returns to what we've grown to expect, because we do expect great defending. And we deserve that. And we need to see it again. And we get it on Saturday night at lower.com field.
The roof might explode if they get that first win. Or really, whenever they get that first win, that roof might completely blow off.
It would explode more if Josh Williams scored a bicycle kick, because Bart himself would just blow up the building.
I don't think he's going to play.
GCG bag.
I don't think he's going to play.
He'll run down and grab that jackhammer and, just run around the stadium.
I wanted to say last week on Zoom with the jackhammer, I think you want to make it really loud and really obnoxious. Have three people jackhammering.
Yes.
There's three people in the logo. Only one person's jackhammering now, not making much
noise.
We
talked about this. I didn't understand why the stone was already broken in half.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand why.
It's probably for safety reasons.
To your point, I don't know, just put up a chain link fence or something.
I don't think that's even the case. Like, the thing that I was weirded out about was, like, why have the logo on the steel plate that you can't destroy? And why is it not spray-painted on the block that you're going to break through?
That
that's number one.
That didn't make any sense to
number
me.
Number two, it's like, it's going to literally, that thick of a concrete block, it'll take, like, half a second, and it will break.
Right.
So it's, I don't know if it's really that much of a safety issue.
Like, the second goal the Crew scored, they didn't know what to do. Like,
right.
Like,
well, no one did, because the goal was like, well, what the hell just happened?
Well, no, but I just mean because it was already they'd already broken it. Like, there was nothing else to jackhammer, really. You know?
Right. As a fan of loud sounds, you got a mic you got to mic that SOB. I mean, I want...
Oh, they had a fake... They had the fake
I want the artificial jackhammer. Just like we hear that dang chainsaw out there in Portland.
Or the cannon at the Blue Jackets.
Loud. I want, like, four mics pointed right at that thing, and I want it loud as hell. That's what I want.
The players want it to be disturbing, so you got to make it disturbing.
You got to make it disturbing. I was amused by it, but it was very cartoonish, and... They could do better with it. If we're going to do it, let's do it right.
I think it'll improve. I think it'll improve, like, as everything else. It'll be like, all right, we tried this. This didn't work. We're going to adjust it to this, or we're going to adjust it to that. We're going to use this instead. Use those concrete tiles, you know, and do that. It's super easy, super simple. It'll break right away. It's not
hell. Well, my wife would love it if our driveway was jackhammered up and replaced. So you know,
just bring it on down.
Maybe just bring my driveway down.
Have a camera at Brian's driveway. Bring Frankie Hayduk to jackhammer the driveway. And now the crew goal, Brian Phillips driveway, Frankie Hayduk with the jackhammer.
The crew have scored, and now they're putting a layer of cement down.
In Westerville.
You were talking about things.
It'd be a short drive for Frankie.
Yeah, true. You were talking about things, you know, figuring things out. I would be interested to see how much they've gotten done, you know, the final touches on the stadium.
In the two weeks.
And I don't think there was a ton that fans ran into that was still not done. I know there's some concessions that are still not open and things.
There's some power outlets that weren't working. We discovered that in the photo room, which is a bad place to have power outlets that are not working.
So, yeah, I'll be interested to see how much else they've gotten done since the first game.
We'll see. They don't have to
be interrupted by tours and, you know, high ticket.
No, that's it. It's about the soccer. Like it's about the stadium. There's no more pomp. There's no more ceremony. Yep. Just play. Have people come in this Saturday against NYCFC, SC, ABC, CF, SC.
All right.
Wow. Nick, Patty White, give a dog a bone.
All right. So we got our picks in, so we're out of here. Thank you to Saucy Brewworks. Give me the Saucy Brewworks love one more time there.
Oh, Eric. We do love Saucy Brewworks because it's the best bar in Columbus. It also just happens to be the best place to be on Earth. Better than Lower.com Field, I have to say. Yeah, it's like it's like tied. It's tied.
It's a draw.
But it is the best place to be in the world. And it is a place where if you're Brewworks, then why not be saucy with it? Here at Saucy Brewworks, come to Saucy Brewworks at 443 West 3rd Avenue.
Thank you, Ari. Like and subscribe the Massive Report podcast and enjoy all the great coverage and the photos, as always. You guys do such a great job with that stuff, too. So Sam, I'll look. I didn't see you at the first game.
I was there.
I'm sure you were. Yes. I just didn't see it. Down there snapping your photos.
We took so many. Ralph and I took so many pictures that it was a large, large gallery.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll look forward to seeing you. Take a picture of me. I mean, and make me look good for once in my life.
Now that I think about it, you're on the south end, right?
Yes, I am.
I was like literally in front of you the entire game.
This seems like something we can talk about off the podcast.
Yeah, we're done.
Hey, we're giving people an inside look.
We're done. All right. Thank you for listening. Like and subscribe. For Murph, Ori, and Sam, I'm Brian. Listen to my radio station, CD92.9. I would appreciate it. We'll see you next week here at Saucy Brewworks for another Mass Report podcast.